Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 112 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing very good. Very good. I've got a growling stomach.
Yeah.
Due to hunger.
Will I cut that out before my little intro or not? I probably will, but...
I don't know. It could be a famous grumble, though.
Well, our audio course is complete, isn't it? The 10 steps, that was good fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to normal this week.
Keep the feedback coming in.
Of sorts. Well, yeah, this week we're talking about doubt and fear. And the reason we're talking about that is because a listener of ours emailed in saying that's what she's struggling with. It's a lady called Anne. So, Anne, this one is for you, but hopefully it will be of help for many more people. I'm sure it will. Before we do, a bit of housekeeping. Sean, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm up in the attic. Mm. I'm getting our studio finished.
Nail by nail, little by little.
Screw by screw, yeah. It's getting there.
Cool.
Yeah, and it will definitely be there this year.
Well, we always say on the show, don't we, you know, it doesn't matter how long it takes you.
Yeah.
As long as you're working towards that goal.
Perseverance. Part of my thing about reducing my work time from 60 hours to 50 hours was to give me a bit more time to do other stuff, you know.
Haven't we got some, what's that electricity thing you can make, what was it called, you know, the
board? Yeah, that's one of our plans, yeah, it's a Tesla generator.
Yeah, it had a special name though, didn't it? I'll try and stick a link up as a video. Basically, there's this little funny generator you can make at home, and it spins around with magnets.
And you get free electricity.
Free electricity, which...
That's the plan. Yeah. And we said we'd make one to see whether we could prove that it worked.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Just... When I finish the attic, we will do one, won't we? We will make one.
Free electricity, I'm up for that. Yeah, that's another thing. But I've had a nice little trip to not Northumberland this time. I've headed south, but not too far south. I've been to Church Stretton.
It's nice down there.
Nice part of the world around there.
Yeah.
Where my father-in-law is kind of, his mum and dad live there. So yeah, it's cool. Really lovely.
Yeah, in my travelling around and living in different parts of the country and doing work at different places, Shrewsbury was a place I was around quite a lot. So Church Stretton just down.
Yeah, well, we didn't hop into Shrewsbury this time, but it's a lovely town.
Mm.
It's not a city, right? It's a town.
It's a bit kind of Chesterish.
Mm. Yeah, lovely
Chester
place,
and though. York and yeah.
Real nice vibe to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is cool. So yeah, yeah. It's all good. And yeah, it's not even August yet, so there's still plenty of time for some summer fun, hey?
Yeah.
Well, you've got a big trip
coming, right? Some sunshine, yeah, off to Italy.
Oh, yeah, because you haven't been in a while.
No, a couple of years, but it's a lovely drive down.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You can stop off, where are you going to stop on the way
down? In Reims. Mm-hmm. Reims, in France, on the way down.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but beautiful, yeah, love it. It's good. Cool. The roads are nice to drive on.
I've never driven on the continent. I've only ever driven in the States on it.
Yeah.
And the UK.
The roads are so empty relative to the British roads. And you notice when you come back up, you come through the channel and you go into the British system and it just grinds to a halt. Yeah.
You've got like illegal immigrants trying to get in your boot and all that.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, yeah.
Bring a couple back.
Yeah, we come on the show.
I'm a liberal chap, yeah. Yeah. Why did you want to come here? The roads are awful. Anyway, visit the website liveinthepresent.co.uk. Because there'll be a blog post to accompany this show. We've got a lot of links, actually, I think, this time to mention. So there's going to be loads of show notes for you to dig deeper into this issue, this topic, which, as I've said, our listener friend Anne emailed in. We have a little autoresponder which goes out when you sign up for our free meditation files and mindfulness toolkit. It sends out a little message asking how you are and what we can help with, really. So we get a lot of interesting replies, and this one from Anne saying she's struggling with doubt and fear.
Right.
Which, without giving the game away too early on, well, are linked heavily to that big old friend of ours, anxiety, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed you wrote on the notes here, hello, old friend.
Yeah. Well, how many topics we talk about?
Well, it comes back to again and again. Living the present here now, going over the past creates depression. Worrying about the future or living future scenarios in the present creates anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can go forward in time and create positive scenarios, and that tends to be creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but when you create the negative scenarios and you live those negative scenarios in the present, that you create anxiety.
Right.
Yeah. So of these two things, doubt is the one. No one comes out of the womb doubting themselves. We learn to doubt ourselves. And we usually learn to doubt ourselves either because we make a series of mistakes, which can happen, but usually we doubt ourselves because other people tell us that we're not up to the task.
Yep.
So we doubt who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And my dear old dad, who hasn't had an appearance on the show for a while...
Been a while.
Yeah, was someone who used to tell me how stupid I was all the time. And I began to believe that and doubted in my own ability to do things and be things. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I began to think, hang on, maybe this isn't right, you know. And I learned not to doubt who I was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think lots of us are in that situation. Someone keeps telling you that you're fat, you're thin, you're stupid, you know, you're spotty, you're too big, you're too small. You start to doubt your abilities to be a person. You know, you tell someone you're an idiot long enough, and then they start to believe it. They're living in a world of doubt.
Yeah. Well, then you met me and all that hard work was undone. Bit of banter there, eh?
Do you doubt yourself?
Yeah, of course. Of course, don't we all? But I do, because I do have some grand plans every now and again. I do doubt my ability to get stuff done. And, you know, I've got... I'm a confident chap, but at the same time, I know I could probably do more. I've always been a little bit of an underachiever since that at school. I just, did the bare minimum to scrape through and never...
But is that a choice?
Probably.
It's a life choice.
It's got to be. You know, I was always the one where the teacher would say, you know, in the report, Edward, you know, you could do so much more if he applied himself.
Yeah.
I've done all right. I was cover of the year back in 91, so that was...
pretty cool.
Can't say fairer than that, can you?
I think that in the same way that if you project forward, there's two forms. There's the positive creativity and the negative anxiety. If you look at doubt or questioning yourself, I think is a good one. Because if I think of psychologists particularly, I know lots of psychologists who get to a point where they believe that they know it all. And once they know it all, and they cease to question themselves and doubt their ability.
Yeah,
they start to become useless as therapists.
Right.
You know, when people are questioning and examining who they are and what they're doing, and maybe we change the word doubt to things like kind of self-audit or self-question, that kind of stuff. That process can be really productive and useful because it means we don't become stale and jaded.
Yeah.
So questioning who I am rather than saying, no, I know it all, I've got it here.
That's cool. Yeah. I've talked about it with musicians quite a lot as well, that kind of second album syndrome where... You know, bands as like kids, I say like Oasis or whatever. You know, they've been playing in the bedrooms their whole lives and just mucking around and not just doing it for the enjoyment of it. And have this, you know, they just explode into the world and just everyone loves them. And then, you know, once they start sipping champagne and living in the big houses in London, they just lose that.
I thought they were snorting coke.
Well, that, and other things.
snorting champagne.
But, the music suffers, doesn't it? And then maybe that doubt creeps in, you know, and then the band starts to have arguments and what have you, and then they split up and blah, blah. And then they have a reunion and make millions again and all that. But
I think one of the things about doubt... in terms of performance, I mean, you're talking about like performers on stage. That if I'm in self doubt and I go on a stage and 4,000 or 40,000 or 400,000 people clap and say, no, Sean, you're all right, you're okay, that can help me overcome my doubt. But I think that in terms of scales, we all do it. You know, some people will go into work. And because they doubt that people like them, or they doubt that they are what they feel they should be, they might kind of make up stories or play up things or say things in certain ways or act in certain ways that make them like they're on a stage.
Yeah.
So that they overcome that sense of doubting themselves. But that's because people in that situation of doubt are looking for external stimulus. You know, you tell me I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So whoever that is, you know, tell me you love me, all that kind of stuff. Whereas if I feel okay about myself inside, and I don't need that external stimulus to tell me that I'm okay, then I'm in a much more comfortable, anxious-free situation.
Yeah, I mean, there are loads of singers, I'd say, who they live off that fear and that doubt, and, you know, seconds before they go on stage in front of 50,000 people are, like, not wanting to go out, they're being sick even sometimes, and then... But they manage to, you know, smash through that fear and doubt, and then they go out, and then they're fine as soon as they get out there.
But the thing is, the drive to be on the stage and to get the accolade of being on the stage comes from the doubt. If you took the doubt away, the need to go on the stage probably wouldn't be there.
Right. So yeah. Transferring that to everyday life, we're not sure what Anne's situation is, but let's say, I don't know, she's not have the courage to, I don't know, it's in her work or something like that. But being in the wrong line of work for a start is a good... Well, if you're not enjoying your work, is a good indicator that you need to get out, right?
Yeah. If you're doubting yourself and your ability, then I think number one is to sit down with yourself, and maybe it takes a bit of paper and kind of an audit and listing and stuff. But it's like, where does that come from? You know, you were not born in a state of doubt. Where did you learn it? And did you learn it from some internal process that you did to yourself, or was it something that other people did to you?
Yep.
You know, was it parents? Was it siblings? Was it boyfriends, girlfriends, partners, you know, work colleagues, bosses? You know, where did it come from? Where did that doubt come from? Because 9 times out of 10, or 99 times out of 100, or 9,900 million times out of whatever, it's nothing to do with other people. We've allowed people to do it to ourselves. And if we can look at it and see what it is for what it is, then we can start to have some confidence in who we are and our decisions and our emotions and feelings, so that we can start to be who we need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that when it comes to that, looking at the people that that maybe gave us this idea that I can doubt myself, perhaps that's going back to step one, where we're learning to forgive people.
Yeah.
And acknowledging the people and letting it go. Let it go. Don't want it. Don't need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want your doubt in my life. I want my life in my life.
There's a cool blog post. It's actually a three-parter, but I think only one bit is free, then you have to get a book. But the one bit that's free is pretty good. It's on personalexcellence.co. I'll put the link in the show notes, of course, but it lists the effects of fear. The actual blog title is Why Should We Overcome Fear? But the four effects of fear, it says, one, that it limits our full potential.
Sure.
Two, interestingly, you can't run from it.
Yeah, that's a good one, that, because people think when they're going through fears and anxieties, they think, I'm going to move town, move job, move whatever.
Mm.
And then they find they've actually just packed it all in a bag and carried it with them and unpacked it where they've gone.
Yeah, there it is, waiting for them.
Yeah.
The other end of the train line.
And you can't beat facing up to things and dealing with things.
Well, that links in with point three, which is that it's illogical and a waste of energy.
Mm.
Being scared of something. Yeah, you know, I'm scared of spiders. It doesn't really add much to my life, but I need to tackle that one.
But most of those fears, those kind of illogical waste of energy fears, are usually fears about things that aren't happening.
Mm.
And the anticipation of something is so much worse than actually doing it. And that the hero dies once and the cow dies a thousand times stuff, isn't it? You go over it and over it and over it and over it. Whereas if you're actually living in the present, you're not involved in those fears now, because they're not here to be involved in.
Mm.
Yeah? It's like you and I in this room. There's nothing to be scared of. We're here. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we could both play with it and we could make ourselves anxious or depressed.
Well, yeah, that's point four, is that it's all in your mind, which...
Yeah.
Once you realise that, then you can spin it around, can't you, and just have that the courage to smash through it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had a cool an example of this, which at the time didn't realise it was a little lesson, but it's a good analogy for now. I was on holiday a month ago, taking little William swimming, and he's not that confident of swimming, basically, because we haven't been swimming with him all that much. You can take kids for swimming lessons now at the age of like 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, no rush. But anyway, he's in this pool. There's a baby pool, which is like 2 feet deep, and there's the big boy pool, which is about a metre plus. So he's all right in the baby pool. He's got his armbands on anyway, and he can kind of doggy paddle to the extent where his feet don't touch the floor. So he's an inch off the floor, which is, and I was trying to explain to him, which, you know, he's only three, but, you know, it doesn't matter if you're an inch or there's a mile of water beneath you, if you're floating on the top, you're okay. But every time I took him into the big pool, he'd cling to me, so he had the doubt and the fear, and he did not want to let go of me at all. And so the second time he went, I managed to kind of have it so that he would, I could have my hand underneath his chest in the big pool, and he'd be kicking his legs out the back and swimming, and then when he wasn't looking, I just gently took my hand away, swam away from him and kind of said, well, and he looked around and I put my hands up and he went, ah, I'm swimming. And then for the rest of the next hour, he's off, you know, having a whale of a time. And then, you know, proudly, when we got back to the base camp, telling Bethan how I've been swimming, Mummy, I've been swimming.
Cool.
So, yeah, he conquered it.
So the doubt, being in the little pool and doubting that he could survive in the big pool, creating that anxiety.
Yeah, massive anxiety. So
when he actually does it, goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all that stuff, it's a bit like, you know, people being scared of flying. You know, when they get off the plane at the other end, it's like realising that was okay, I'm safe, it's all right. You know, I can do this.
Yeah, but whether people there are okay getting on another plane... Or whatever, you know, it's going to be a few weeks before we'll go swimming again. So maybe the next time it's been too long, maybe we needed to
reinforce it.
Yeah, reinforce that, you know.
Yeah, maybe habit. Is that what we say about persistent and consistent? And to get the new habit.
Mm.
Yeah, if he was going swimming every day. I know someone who was scared of flying very much, and to overcome it, he bought himself one of those round the world tickets that BA did. And as long as you keep moving in the same direction, you can have so many flights around the world.
Wow.
But he bought an extra add-on where he had something like 12 stops he could do in the States. And in the States, because they're using planes more like we use buses or trains, he went up and down so many times that by the time he left the States, he cracked it. Mm-hmm. And he'd gone. There's no fear left.
Yeah, but he kind of forced himself because he's forked out all this cash for the ticket. Anyway,
yeah, so. Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going, it doesn't matter, I've got to go.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm with that.
Yeah. I found another website called fearlessstories.com, which is just a list of blog posts, which is all about people that have overcome fear. Well worth checking that one out as well.
Yeah.
There's a load of TED stuff as well. I mean, TED.com, blah, blah, blah. There's like a text-based conversation about people, real-life folks who've overcome fear. And then there's a great TED talk by Karen Thompson about what fear can teach us. So again, really encourage people to dive deeper into this one. Because we all have our fears, don't we? Whether they're spiders or things that we don't think we're capable of doing.
Mm.
So it's a topic that I think people need to dive into much deeper.
One of the things that happens for me, and it comes from that legacy from my father telling me that I was an idiot and I couldn't do stuff, is that I'm in a situation where I've taken on, since my early 20s, the idea that there's nothing I can't do.
Yeah.
And if I ever get to that point where I'm feeling like I'm fearful of something, I'll go and do it.
Okay.
And I won't allow myself to go back into that I'm a useless bag of rubbish stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do it. Yeah. And if it's something that I'm feeling like, oh, yeah, I'd like to do that. But I'm scared, then I think, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to overcome whatever that fear is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you got any techniques or what have you for kind of block it out and go through it?
Well, if we go on to the issues about what's the resource of the week here, for me, the resource of the week is the learning mindfully to use a positive inner voice. Because if you are in states of anxiety, depression or doubt... It's because your inner voice is reinforcing, ruminating and repeating the negative. I'm a bag of rubbish. No, I'm a bag of rubbish. I'm a bag of rubbish. I am. You know, and it goes on and on and on. Yeah, and you have to listen to that voice and you have to reframe it. You have to get into a new mantra, which is, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm great, you know, I'm happy, I'm positive, I'm rich, I'm wealthy, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I'm sexy, I'm, you know, whatever it is, you know, get in there and repeat it, you know, sing it when you're driving in the cars. Work out your mantra like a little poem for yourself, you know, it could be a limerick, doesn't matter what it is, but do it, create it, write it down and repeat it, because that's what you're doing with the negative stuff. It isn't like some contrived nonsense to write out a positive bit and to keep repeating it, because that's what you're doing with the negative stuff. You've written it in your head and you keep repeating it.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're replacing it, you know?
Nice.
So the resource is between your ears, you know, do it.
And have the courage and the confidence to trust in that awesome resource that we all have, eh?
Yeah, yeah. It's there. It's there. It's an indisputable gift that we've all got.
Kick
you just
that,
have to use it.
Kick all that crap out of your life. Did you write that one, or did I write that?
No, you wrote that.
Are you sure?
But I agree with it.
I'm sure you wrote that one.
No.
Maybe it was.
That's definitely you.
I mean, going on with the kids thing as well, you know, there's a lot in the news now about how we don't let our kids have the freedoms that... my generation, your generation had when, you know, we could just go off on our bikes for miles. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Probably is, because...
On the council estates when I was a kid, we all used to play out. You know, it was a bit like being latchkey kids. You know, you go off and you do your stuff. And you come back at the end of the day. You know, sometimes you'd be given some sandwiches and a bottle of water, that kind of stuff. But people would go off and play.
Yeah.
And these days, we've got this crazy thing about stranger danger. You know, we're now getting to the point where we mistrust everybody. You know, every man walking down the road on his own is a paedophile. You know, and can a man say hello to a kid? I went through a thing a while ago when I was driving down a road on the Isle of Wight. And there was a young girl, 9, 10, something like that, running down the road, crying her eyes out. And now, all my instincts were to stop and to check that she was okay, and I didn't do it. Mm. And the reason why I didn't do it was the whole thing about man on his own, car, door open, child screaming, you know, and thinking, mm-mm.
Yeah, this don't look good.
Yeah, and what a crazy place to get into. You know, and I'm not proud of myself for doing that. I think that's just crazy. Why on earth did I do that? Why didn't I face what needed to be faced? Was, you know, what's the problem? We need to sort this person out. They're in pain. They're worried. I don't know what was going on for them.
Yeah, sad, isn't
it? Yeah, it's not good.
Mm, that ain't good.
No.
Yeah, we need a bit more faith in the universe, don't we?
Yeah.
Sometimes, I think.
Yeah. There's a lot of good people out there. Mm. You know, the majority of people are okay. Yeah, we need to embrace that and celebrate it.
Remember that. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you've done your resource.
Yeah, I've done my. What's your resource?
It's a blog post I found a couple of weeks ago. Actually, I've been meaning to mention it on elitedaily.com, and it's about how optimistic people have one thing in common: they're always late. That's me. I won't give the game away too much. It's a good little blog post.
I can get that.
And it's all kind of... I remember Bethan, she went on a trip to Kenya once, years ago. Actually, it was the catalyst for me quitting my job, because I couldn't go because I didn't have enough time to take off work. Yada, yada, yada. So I was out of there and within a year. But they have this thing in Kenya called African time, or in Africa. Well, you know, meetings, you say your meeting is whatever, midday, and then like an hour later the person will show up. But it's no big deal over there, apparently.
But that's like manual, isn't it?
People might on the way, they might bump into someone they know and have a chat with them, this, that, and the other.
Yeah. That was like that when I was in Wales. I had the farm in Wales, and I remember the chimney sweep saying he would come round on Tuesday and do the chimney. And he was right, he did come round on a Tuesday, but it was several weeks later that he came round. And he was like, yeah, it's Tuesday. So now we're like, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, whenever I'm coming here for do our recordings, I'm usually 5-10 minutes late.
15-20.
That's just because I've set off late. I haven't met someone on the way for a chat. But I do get anxious about meetings as well, especially, you know, business stuff in town or whatever, where I've got a meeting at this time. I'll always aim to get there exactly that time rather than 10 minutes early, where I could just chill out. So I have that anxiety on the way, which which isn't all that healthy, probably.
I like getting places early.
But...
So well, I can chill.
Yeah, I should do. But then this thing says that it's an optimistic trait.
Well, I'm going to read that.
No, really, I think. Yeah. Cool, all right. We actually haven't decided what we're talking about next week.
Well, I think we need to see whether we can get one of our...
case studies.
Yeah, case studies on.
Right, you email Dave, see if you can come in next week and have a chat with us.
Okay, David, can you hear this?
David, are you out there?
Yeah.
We need you.
Okay, I'll do that.
Cool, all right. Visit the website, livingthepresent.co.uk, for all the show notes and links. There's loads this week, so lots to dive into and investigate. And yeah, I'll leave it there. Sean, you have a good week.
That's good. And you have a wild time.
Goodbye.
See ya.